Wherever the road may take you, Discount Tire and Continental Tire get you there safely with the perfect combination of style, comfort, and price. Get a set of Continental tires at your local Discount Tire store or online at discounttire.com. Discount Tire. Let's get you taken care of.
Hello there, and welcome to another episode of Meet the Press Reports. And this week, it's a deep dive into the American oligarchy. We've heard politicians say it before. They claim they want to take big money out of politics, but they never seem to do it, do they? So just how much money is in our politics, and specifically in our elections? Well, here's one truism. It continues to grow. Through June in the 2022 cycle, there was nearly $10 billion raised for just House and Senate races. I'm not counting gubernatorial races here, just House and Senate. This level of fundraising in our election system is growing exponentially. Because if you go back to 2014, there was just under $5 billion raised for the House and the Senate alone. And we're basically already past that mark. It was just over a little of half of what it was in the first 18 months of the 2022 cycle. And we know it's going to be well over $10 billion now. But the truly new phenomenon here is the mega donor class. In 2014, only three people decided to donate at least $10 million of their own money to various House and Senate races. In 2022, that number is now up to 18, a six-fold increase. And even as we see this wealthy donor class pour millions of dollars into our elections each year, there's millions more in dark money that they pour in on top of it. Those are funneled through nonprofits and basically are untraceable. But as the list of individuals donating millions and billions of dollars grows, so do concerns that political campaigns are essentially being hijacked by this wealthy class, controlled by this donor class, made up of individuals who have this outsized influence, not just who wins the elections and who runs the country, but what issues are even debated in these campaigns. NBC News correspondent Jacob Ward has more.
Where have you seen money make its way into politics?
Where have I not seen money make its way into politics? Is probably the better question.
Abigail Disney's grandfather Roy co-founded the Disney Company with his brother Walt. She grew up surrounded by the ultra-rich and is now a filmmaker and professional critic of the billionaire class.
You have an ultra-wealthy class whose life and interests are entirely divorced from the reality of everyday Americans. The things that concern them are not a concern the everyday American just don't come up, you know, if you're ultra wealthy.
Do you think the ultra rich, if anything, are less qualified than everyday people to just be empathetic, think about the problems of the world?
There are studies that show that the wealthier you get, the less nice you become.
In her upcoming documentary called The American Dream and Other Fairy Tales, Disney explores the collapse of the American dream through the lens of the happiest place on Earth. Her finger points directly at the top.
A custodian would have to work for 2,000 years to make what Bob Iger makes in one.
Do we live in an oligarchy, do you think, in America right now?
Yes, I think we live in an oligarchy. Much of our oligarchy in this country is a result of the government privileging either an industry or a group of individuals within an industry or keeping classes of people away from the corridors of power.
And the data is clear. That privileged class of people is injecting huge amounts of money into politics on both sides of the aisle. An NBC News analysis shows that so far this year, 18 individuals have each donated over $10 million to this midterm race. That's a total of $504 million, over half a billion dollars in political contributions. In 2014, only three people contributed over $10 million each.
Good evening.
Among the most active political players is Peter Thiel. The Silicon Valley tech billionaire and PayPal founder has thrown tens of millions of dollars behind just two Senate candidates. In Ohio, he's backing fellow venture capitalist and political outsider J.D. Vance. In Arizona, Thiel donated heavily to the campaign of Blake Masters. Each clinched their respective GOP nominations. And while Masters is happy to espouse his far-right political positions,
in Arizona, there's an invasion at our southern border.
He's much less forthcoming with details about the financial relationship with Thiel, who's estimated to be worth $3.8
billion. We're just trying to talk about campaign finance.
Producer Ezra Kaplan tried to press the issue with Masters outside an event closed to the press in Scottsdale last month.
Peter gave what he gave, and I'm grateful that he supported that outside group, and I'm working hard every day to raise the money internal to the campaign that we need to go out and spread the message.
Will you be able to stay independent with the money?
Masters is now set to face incumbent Mark Kelly in November. Kelly enjoys a much larger war chest from mostly small donors plus several super PACs. Masters, however, has received most of his support from a single super PAC funded by Thiel. And since the primary, that funding seems to have dried up. Peter Thiel declined our interview request, as did several other billionaires we approached. His biographer, however, says this is of a piece with who Thiel is.
What he wants is to pay as little as possible in taxes, to live with as much freedom to do what he wants whenever he wants, and to have lots of government contracts for his businesses. It's this idea that people like himself, people like Peter Thiel and Mark Zuckerberg and the other CEOs of these very successful tech companies are these genius capital allocators and genius administrators. And wouldn't it be better if they kind of ran the world?
This is an extremely politically active group.
Matt Lacombe is a professor of political science at Case Western Reserve University and has been studying the political behavior of this elusive group for more than 10 years.
Over 90% of the billionaires we studied had made political contributions that we could track down. That's a much, much higher proportion than average Americans or even well-off Americans who we might think of as being generally politically active.
What Lacombe and his co-authors have found is that while these billionaires have enormous influence, they stay out of sight, something he calls stealth politics.
An overwhelming majority of them stay totally silent or are completely vague about what their political preferences and policy wishes are. And moreover, we find that many of them take political actions that would push economic policies in conservative directions that clash with what average Americans say that they want through public opinion polls.
And that secrecy has the support of the Supreme Court. When Citizens United was decided in 2010, it helped create a new category of political organization, the super PAC, and a new category of dark money nonprofits that allow political donations from billionaires and others to be effectively unlimited and to go unreported.
We expect this court to fully utilize the First Amendment to protect the rights of people of average means.
James Bopp was the architect of the landmark case and says his intention was to empower everyday people to pool political donations inside companies and labor unions, something he says the framers would have approved of. But Citizens United also wound up empowering the richest people in American history.
Do you draw any connection between what you helped to create with Citizens United and the sort of some of the new tactics that academics are telling us are starting to emerge?
Well, you know, there's always been an advantage to have money. Mm-hmm. Surprise! Okay, there's there's advantages in having money.
Thank you very much for making it.
What's new is how and when that money is being deployed.
So primary elections tend to involve less money, and they tend to be less visible. All of that means that the actions of powerful people and the money they might have to spend can go farther.
Let's think about this tactically for a second. If you're Peter Thiel and you've already put $10 million into the candidacy of J.D. Vance here in Ohio, maybe you don't have to worry about the general election. I mean, right, once he's won the primary, maybe the little R next to his name will carry him the rest of the way in today's hyper-partisan political climate.
But it wasn't always like this. Once upon a time, it was culturally unpopular in the United States to be, well, rich. Today, we as a society tend to put the ultra-rich up on a pedestal.
Now we're looking to people and admiring them for the quality of being able to become very, very wealthy. So there was a massive shift.
Do you think that explains the political activism of billionaires, that they just feel, well, I'm qualified to make decisions for everybody because I've amassed this fortune through my pluck and my brains?
That is exactly, I think, what's going on.
Your activism, your filmmaking, your speaking out, even in front of Congress about this stuff, makes me wonder, do you think you would get involved in politics? Do you want to create a candidate?
I think my unique position in this world is to use my position in the oligarchy to put the oligarchy out of business.
My thanks to NBC News correspondent Jacob Ward for that report. Earlier this week, I sat down with Sam Bankman-Fried. He's the CEO of the cryptocurrency exchange FTX. You may have seen their ads. And he's one of America's youngest billionaires. And recently, he's used some of the money he's made to become one of the biggest donors in this year's midterm cycle, including in the state of Oregon, where he broke a spending record to back a single Democratic House candidate who ended up losing a primary big. You've spent your money a little bit differently in politics than others have. Didn't go well in Oregon. What did you learn, and how are you adapting? Because you strike me as somebody, you try something, you look at how it works. Okay, let me try this way.
Yeah, it's a good question. And, you know, part of this is, look, you know, stuff happens. You know, I do what I can, do what I think is right, and adapt. And, you know, in Oregon, like, there's a candidate who I thought had a chance of being, you know, one of the biggest advocates for pandemic prevention, you know, in D.C. I think one of the things I learned is, look, there's really diminishing marginal returns here, right? Like, there's no matter how much you spend in any one place, there's just a limit to how much impact it's going to have. There's a limit to how much support it can be. And I think that was the biggest takeaway from it, was just, you know.
Do you think you spent too much money there in hindsight?
Yeah, I think it's probably right.
So there's a point of saturation that you've learned.
Yeah, that's right.
What about your individual influence? You've seen what's happened to George Soros.
Yep.
He's been politically attacked. It gets, you know, you can make the same case for the Adelson family, both
Absolutely.
Sheldon and Miriam, right?
Yep.
These are two people that have been dominant over the last decade.
Yep.
Are you prepared for that?
So in the end, I want to do what's right for the country and, you know, not optimize for people saying nice things about me. If people say mean things about me, I can take it. But the other thing that I would say is I'm really aiming to do this in a bipartisan way. And I think that's something
you've given to some Republicans, but it's been very targeted.
It's been targeted. And I think the reason for that is that I don't at its core view this as a Democrats versus Republicans thing where my core goal is boosting a party. Mm-hmm. I view this as having constructive people, whatever party they're part of, is incredibly valuable for DC. And something I've just seen on the ground where people who are willing to get together and try and do the important things for the country, they can compromise their party and they're who saved the day at the end. And so I'm happy to support, you know, across the aisle in either direction.
So there are going to be some people to watch this and say, rich guy's got his own agenda here. He's not telling us. Why shouldn't folks be a little bit skeptical of your real motives here, Mitt, that this is really all about crypto? This is really all about your business, which is regulating what you do.
Right. It's a good question. And frankly, everyone should always be skeptical of things like this, right? I'm not going to tell people that they should get anyone a free pass on it. And I think what I'd say is, like, look at the evidence, try and trace out what's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really funny. Sometimes I'll read these articles and they'll say, you know, SBF donates to candidate something crypto, something, and the entire article will be like, we're trying really hard to find the crypto angle, and we haven't found it yet. The candidates have no statements. They don't know what a Bitcoin is. There's a crypto angle. We're still looking. And it's like, no, like, that was...
People aren't taking you at your word?
People aren't taking me at my word, and I understand that. And I think what I'd say is then do the research. You know, look at the policies that I'm supporting, the candidates that I'm supporting, you know, and many of these people, I have no idea what their position is on crypto.
Okay, but you now will have lawmakers return your calls a lot easier than the average person, right? So your money is effective in that respect, and you are going to be able to make your case in front of members of Congress because you're willing to spend money. Have you thought about that?
I think it's probably true, and frankly, I think that there is value from the pandemic prevention side there, being able to, again, get in front of them and say, hey, look, this is a big issue. I think that, you know, on the crypto side, the way that I view that is as I have a duty as a member of the industry to try and get us regulated, to try and move the industry in a more responsible direction. And I think that requires engagement. I think it'd be irresponsible of me not to engage, you know, with Capitol Hill, with regulators. And the things that I've been arguing for are more regulation for the industry. I think that's what's right for the country. I don't know if that's what's right for a company, but it's what needs to happen.
Let me ask you this. Should it be so easy for you to become a big donor in our political system? Do you think your money should be as relevant in our system as it can become?
It's a good question. And it's so hard to view this outside of the lens of what is going on right now, of what different equilibrium
these are the rules that are.
And
you're
the rules
sitting
that
there
are,
and you're
right.
Like, hey, if this is how it works, then I'm going to participate. I guess I'm asking you,
what
do you think
should
it should
be?
Yeah.
I have a lot of sympathy for thoughts of overhauling things in one direction or another. I've thought about this. I don't feel confident that I know what the right answer is, right? You could imagine a highly transparent regime where the emphasis was on full transparency of contributions. You could imagine a capped regime like what we had, you know, at least in larger part before Citizens United. There are arguments for that. There, you know, I frankly don't feel like I feel confident what the right answer is there. I certainly don't feel like we've necessarily reached it as a society, though.
You think every money you spend in politics should be disclosed publicly? Are you comfortable with that?
I think that I think what I would say is, you know, if there was a norm where every dollar that Everin donated mm-hmm. in politics was to be disclosed publicly, I would have a lot of sympathy for that. I think I might support it. I haven't thought carefully about it enough to know. But
well, it sounds like what you're saying is maybe there's some donations that you have made that you wouldn't make if you knew they were going to be immediately public.
I don't generally think about it that way. I generally think of it as like these are the right the right contributions to make. Mm-hmm. I think that and I think that there is a thing where it's important what the norms are because that's what press is going to judge everything by, right? And it's important that there is the right context. And I think that you would see fairly different treatment of things if everything was made transparent. I think that there would be advantages to that system.
You made your money in some ways by finding a loophole, right? And in the exchange rates and how the exchange system, and you saw something was missing. I'm curious now, bringing a fresh set of eyes to how campaign politics works, to how the funding mechanisms work. Have you found this sort of gaping hole, flaw, or loophole that you're like, how come nobody else has noticed this?
So to the extent that I have, I think what it is people are just not engaged enough in policy. Mm-hmm. They're not engaged enough in what's going on in D.C.
When you say people meaning the electorate or people meaning elected officials?
Oh, I mean the electorate.
Okay.
And I think that there's sort of this notion that I certainly ascribe to at one point that I think a lot of people do, that you can't actually have, you know, your vote doesn't actually matter, that this is all sort of irrelevant. And I think that just turns out to not be right. And even if you just look at voting, right, like, is it worth it to vote? The answer is yes, right? Does your vote matter for elections? The answer is yes. And if you do the math, it's actually extremely impactful. Every person's vote, I mean, obviously, if it's a presidential election, it matters if you're in a swing state. But, you know, you're having impact over millions of dollars in expectation of what happens.
You've talked that $1 billion is perhaps your ceiling for 2024. How would you imagine spending that? Candidates or your own organization to maybe educate the public?
So it all is going to depend on the details. And I really do mean that in that, like,
depend on who's running? Does it depend on if it's Biden and Trump type of thing?
That's one thing it's going to depend on. It's not just the presidency as well. It's more generally like, I want to support great public servants. And, you know, if you imagine an election where everyone running on both sides of the aisle for every race was an amazing public servant, I say, great. You know, I don't, I'm not needed here. Like, this is, you know, I'm happy. And, you know, I think that if you had the opposite where everyone was horrific, which obviously won't happen, I think then what I would start to get to is there needs to be an informational campaign to alert people to how poorly people are being nominated here, right? And so it's going to be really, really responsive to the weeds of which direction things go.
Sam Beckman-Fried, appreciate you coming on. Not every major donor will talk about why they do it. I appreciate that you did.
Of course.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When we come back, how great of a threat is big money in politics to our democracy? We're going to discuss that more. Stay with us.
Wherever the road may take you, Discount Tire and Continental Tire get you there safely with the perfect combination of style, comfort, and price. Get a set of Continental tires at your local Discount Tire store or online at DiscountTire.com. Discount Tire, let's get you taken care of.
Join Hoda Kotb for a brand new season of her podcast, Making Space.
For season 5, I am making space to talk to people who are providing a sense of hope and inspiration when life changes course.
Uplifting conversations with inspiring individuals like NFL legend Drew Brees, singer-songwriter Ziggy Marley, and Today's Show co-anchor Savannah Guthrie as you have never heard her before.
I found faith more viscerally, not because the bad thing didn't happen, but because it did.
I promise you, like me, will leave these conversations with some wisdom for your own journey, empowered and inspired to make space in your own life.
New episodes of Making Space with Hoda Kotb are released every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Campaign finance regulations have been tried and tried again. Can you regulate money? But are there more loopholes now than ever? I'm joined by Fash Shakur. He's the chief political advisor to Bernie Sanders. He worked at a longtime think tank, the Center for American Progress, before that. And Trevor Burrus. He's a research fellow at the Cato Institute. Thank you both for joining us. So let me I'm going to start with my friend from Cato here, because I'm curious if you accept the premise that there's too many wealthy donors in politics.
No. I think that, as we saw from the interview, donors, we assume some sort of nefarious motive, but they actually are just trying to support causes they believe in. And let's say that that's 90% or most of them. And when you support a cause you can believe in, and you try and get the message out there, that's what people tend to think about the things they believe in, right? So if you are against the NRA, you're against the money the NRA has, but you might be for Every Town for Gun Safety and people trying to spend money to change minds on that. So I don't think that billionaires are just per se a bad class, or that they are have the same views at all. We can look at they don't have the same views. They're not just in the interest of billionaires. They're trying to get different ideas out there. And money is how you get information out there.
Fast, where are you in this?
Money has a corrosive impact on politics. And it's not just merely through the influence of elections. It influences the motivations of policymakers from the top all the way down to the bottom, not only at the federal level, but if you go down, it has even a deeper impact if you go down to the state houses. You don't win state legislative seats unless you have money. It is nearly impossible if you look around the country to try to win without the influence. And if you look at the influence of large donors, often, especially in this day and age where so much is broken in Washington, D.C., their biggest influence is the state legislatures, where if you just look at the industries that are funding them, you see where politics and policies flow.
All right. Do you agree that money should be more transparent in where it comes from?
I'm okay with that. I mean, I would allow more money to be given to candidates so you could actually get startup candidates and get new candidates out there with new ideas.
Paz, is that probably the only plausible way to figure regulating money? It is clear to me it's impossible to regulate money because there's always a lawyer who finds a new loophole.
Well, not only the lawyer, but the law as it has been construed by the Supreme Court has now said, you know, money is a form of speech. But I'm on the side of an argument, legal argument, that is in the minority that believes it should be banned from politics.
Well, we're like a generation away from that.
Yes, right. And we should have federally funded elections. That's what I believe in. Now, can we get there incrementally? But that is the North Star that I point to.
All right. So short of that, rigorous transparency.
Yes. I mean, and in what form, right? Because you want voters to know and understand. So if you look at the Disclose Act, what they're suggesting is that the donors to large super PACs would be listed by name at the end of an ad. Mm-hmm. Now, is that sufficient? Do I know enough about a name, Peter Thiel, mm-hmm. Sam Bankman-Fried, to make a judgment about that ad? I would argue, you know, we got to do a little bit better even about that. I think you got to have better disclosure and transparency around what the motivations are of these individuals.
On the federally funded elections, for example, like the reason that's never going to work and it won't ever happen is the only way that could be fair is if sitting members of Congress voted to give opponents more money to spend against them than they currently have as incumbents. The biggest advantage is incumbency. And you need to outspend to get incumbency. 90% plus retention rate, right? You get all the money if you're an incumbent. And if you want to challenge them, you need to raise money. And what will not happen, as long as the foxes are guarding the hen house, as long as these politicians are making the rules by which they get elected, they're not going to make a fair election system. So federally funded thing, sure. Let me imagine this thing. Triple the donation amount for people challenging sitting members of Congress. That makes it fair. Never going
to
happen.
Just a quick counterpoint to that. Trevor started this conversation,
yeah.
You know, saying that essentially he doesn't believe that money governs the outcome of a lot of elections.
It's important, but it's not everything.
Exactly. And I jump off that premise, and that's why. So if you gave a grassroots candidate enough money to compete to get the word out, you and I are agreeing essentially that you have a chance to win. So we are now debating how much of a federally funded amount would you a candidate need to be seated with in order to have a fair and competitive shot?
I'm saying that Congress will never pass that law.
Well, let's start though. But the one thing that you might be able to get him to do, because during the McCain-Feingold debate, Mitch McConnell was for instant disclosure. I've always challenged some people on the left, go introduce Mitch McConnell's counter bill to McCain-Feingold and see where people stand on there. Instant disclosure, that's a little bit more than the Disclose Act, that said, that allowed people, you want to give, Peter Thiel shouldn't have to give to a super PAC. Peter Thiel can give $5 million directly to Blake Masters' campaign, let his campaign deal with it. But every time he runs an ad, he says, I'm Blake Masters and my campaign is funded by, and you have to list any individual that gives you more than, say, $1 million.
Yeah. So this is a town of compromise. I'm not for having to disclose yourself. And again, everyone knows this, what causes you give to. If you're a pro-choice person, you live in Alabama, you don't want people to know that you're giving to pro-choice candidates. Maybe it's, you know, very important. In terms of donor privacy, you have Planned Parenthood and the NRA on the same side, right? And when it comes to candidates,
why should a wealthier citizen basically get a special privilege like that?
the special privilege of not knowing who's given. Everyone gets that privilege.
Well, intervening in an election in particular is what Chuck's talking about, right? Like, so if you've decided, I want to engage in the public debate of influencing an election, telling people who they should vote for, who they shouldn't vote for, why should you be able to operate in the shadows and the dark?
So again, I said I'd make a compromise, and it would be above a pretty high limit. Because like one thing, I'm pretty skeptical about members of Congress. I think we all are. But right now we have a campaign limit
of $2,900.
I even think the price tag of a member of Congress is higher than $2,900.
Right.
I think if you really want to get them to do something, you're going to give them at least $50,000, $100,000, who knows? But below that, people shouldn't have to disclose. We don't need to know who our neighbors are giving money to in any way, especially if it's below a non-corrupting level.
But the influence of money in politics, less so now about the direct money to a candidate and more so around outside spending and races in favor of those candidates.
Well,
so you're
this
talking
is
about,
to
that's
me the
because
air.
Of
Let's
the,
talk
that's
about McCain. I, look, I actually think McCain-Feingold might have been a mistake because it took the money, took the political parties out of the big money game.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden we had no transparency into who was given money.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you accept that?
Right.
McCain-Feingold might have been a mistake.
Yeah, I think that's right. And if you look at 501c4 explosions, there's also no cops on the beat. So if you look at the way in which 501c4s are supposed to be construed and how they're supposed to spend money in elections, these outside spending vehicles that dump millions and millions of dollars on air, they weren't supposed to be doing electioneering. And yet, that is the primary purpose of most of these organizations because nobody is stopping them.
Right. The IRS made an attempt and that got weaponized.
From the left and the right, everyone did.
But it got weaponized by political activists.
Absolutely. The IRS should not be regulating. But I mean, so look, outside groups, again, we can't forget the bigger picture. Politics matters a lot now to a lot of people in this country. It's very, very divided. That the spending is going to come in that way, and it's going to be more outside groups, so we can call them dark money. It's just that people don't necessarily have to disclose what they're giving to politics, and I don't think they should, except for maybe some extreme circumstances. And so, yes, these outside groups are a product of the limits. We know that since 76. You limit that much to campaigns, and then that's going to go somewhere else, and we're going to have these outside groups spending. And the candidates don't like it, by the way. They want that money, and they can't control the message of the outside groups.
What would happen if you could collect unlimited amounts of money in your in presidential campaigns? What would that turn into? And it was disclosed, but what would be your fear?
I worry about a lot because if there's a recent Supreme Court ruling that says you can go into debt and then be paid back later if you went
Ted
into
Cruz.
Debt. Yes, Ted Cruz's case. And so basically what it it's the same kind of argument is that if one individual could bankroll Chuck Todd to run for Senate, you know that the only benefactor that I need and the person whose allegiance I need to have throughout my entire life and career is to ensure that so-and-so is happy with me. And that influences your choices on anything and everything, right? You're thinking about how does that individual think about this issue, that issue, and that issue.
What if we don't think about it as allegiance? What you ask what would happen? We would have more dynamic politics, right? You have to raise money in these small amounts. That means you have to get a broad brush. If there is someone out there who says, like that happened to Eugene McCarthy in 68, and I have to go back this far because we have those campaign come in, he wanted to end the war in Vietnam. He wanted to challenge a sitting Democrat president for the nomination. And he got donations from the Mott family for $600,000 to do it.
But Trevor, what you're intentionally doing when you say a millionaire, a billionaire is going to give that much money is you're saying all of the other people who might give $5 or $10 don't matter anymore. That's the biggest problem we're having.
Well, this is a debate we're not going to end here, but I do have to go. You guys were terrific in representing these two points of view. That's all we have for Meet the Press Reports this week. Thanks for being here. Next week on Meet the Press Reports, the wide and growing world of U.S. gun culture. The more armed Americans are, the more armed Americans get. And the farther the country moves from what some people believe is effective gun safety legislation. We're going to talk to a diverse group of gun owners about the safety measures they want, the ones they fear, and the impact the thriving gun culture has on American life. I'll see you next week on Meet the Press Reports, and this Sunday on Meet the Press.
Wherever the road may take you, Discount Tire and Continental Tire get you there safely with the perfect combination of style, comfort, and price. Get a set of Continental tires at your local Discount Tire store or online at discounttire.com. Discount Tire, let's get you taken care of.